Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. This is Shirley Stolzer along with Judy Ross interviewing today Mrs. Gertrude Kaplan on 2592. We're sitting in a bright, clear room and looking forward to talking with Gertrude Kaplan again. Mrs. Kaplan, Gertrude, would you give us your name and address so we know that we hear you well?
Thank you. I'd be delighted to, and may I welcome you officially, Shirley, whom I've known for many years, and Judy, whom I just met on the telephone and now have the pleasure of meeting in person. And if I didn't say it before, let me take a minute to say that I'm really very honored to be a part of this process. I have the greatest admiration and respect for all of council, and especially the innovative, unique project which this is.
Yes.
I am Gertrude Forman, F-O-R-M-A-N, used to spelling it, Kaplan, C-A-P-L-A-N, of Pittsburgh. And what other vital statistic do you want, Shirley?
All right for now. Gertrude, as I listened to the tapes that you made in May and June 89, I was very much impressed by the extent of your involvement in a variety of organizations in Pittsburgh, and yet I felt we only touched the surface of these things. Now, I have noted down some of the organizations and some issues that I thought we might broaden by our talking together, but I noticed you have some notes. Would you like to begin?
Shirley, I would suspect that we're going to be on the same wavelength.
Good. Okay.
And so I would be delighted if you would guide this.
Good. All right. Let's. You were very, very active in Ladies' Hospital Aid.
Mm-hmm.
And Montefiore, as you mentioned at that time, Montefiore Ladies' Hospital Aid had a variety of activities outside of the hospital. And the only one you mentioned was the blind, service to the blind. Were there other activities that Ladies' Hospital Aid did outside of Montefiore?
All right. I can only speak of the scope of the activities in the more contemporary view, which was mine.
Right.
I'm not speaking about the turn of the century, but I think that that should be noted, which was that the fundraising that was done by that original core of women was outside of any existing institution. You're aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
But you may not
fundraising for the hospital
that's
you're
right.
talking about.
Yes. Actually, I shouldn't say you're aware, Shirley.
No,
I've been,
I'm not.
I've been
right.
speaking to, you know, now that I'm the senior in many of the committee activities and meetings that I go to, if I can contribute anything to so many of our wonderful young leadership, it's some of this historical, factual material.
Right.
And I say, you knew this, and they say, no, we didn't know this. So this is what I'm going to say to you. You know that the women, the 10 women, the 10 Jewish women who created the Hebrew Ladies Aid Society preceded the building of the hospital. You're aware of that?
Yes.
All right. It was their awareness of the fact that Jewish people who maintained a kashrut, the Orthodox Jew, had no institution to go to. There weren't that many institutions in 1898.
Right.
And in the early 20th century, Jewish doctors who were on the quota system even for admission to medical schools didn't have where to become interns. This was a major problem. So this group of 10 Jewish women, headed by Mrs. Barnetta Davis, literally began to collect 10 cents a week among themselves and then into the broader community. And it took their farsightedness to provoke and inspire the men, the elders of the community, the affluent men, to understand that such an institution had to be built. Now, once 1908 and groundraising for Old Montefiore did occur, their work was not in the hospital. There was no volunteer corps per se. They were still collecting and distributing food to indigent poor families. They were still doing basic social service in a non-professional way. Right. And that meant, and this is one of the programs that was still active in the 40s and 50s when I became active in Hospital Aid, that meant that they saw the need for visitation and observance of Jewish holidays at the institutions where Jews were living. Mm-hmm. So when I was in the presidency, we still had an active group of volunteers who visited Mayview and Woodville. You never knew this,
Shirley? No, I didn't know
yes,
that.
Yes, yes.
No.
This was an active, outside the hospital program. We began to do it in conjunction with other groups. Seems to me that some of the wives of Jewish war veterans participated in this. Eventually, B'nai B'rith women came into this sector. We had very faithful regulars who observed the Pesach, who brought the matzah and brought the rabbi. We preceded, actually, the current Western Pennsylvania Association for Visits to Exceptional People that Rabbi Heber initiated.
Yes.
By doing this, within my knowledge, certainly in the 40s and 50s and 60s. The Committee for Service to the Blind that I touched on
was
broader than maybe what I discussed.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to hear more?
Yes, very much so.
All right. I know I spoke about the late Mrs. Lebo, and I spoke about her daughter-in-law, Jana Kleiman.
Right.
Touched on the fact that we won an award with Wayne Bryant. We had an enormous number of readers. I was among that group. We read live. We didn't just do a taping, but we arranged and met with and visited with those blind professionals, blind students, blind adults in other professions who needed to have, you see, this is before all the available Braille and all the available talking books and that sort of thing. And Ladies Hospital Aid Committee for Service to the Blind was really, I think, the only, to my knowledge, organization doing that. Now, Road of Shalom Sisterhood had, and it's unfortunately, I'm told it's disappearing, a very strong Braille group of volunteers who did indeed translate books into Braille. That was a very, very significant part of their sisterhood work. But Hospital Aid women, to my knowledge at that time, and I would have known, because as I say, I know what came later,
right.
Really did... We took the kids, the students from the school to Kennywood. We took them to the zoo. There was no aviary. We took them on field trips, in other words. It was a one-on-one beyond the parameters of the hospital building.
Was this in the 40s, you say?
It existed in the 40s, but it was earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. See, I came in at post-World War II
yes.
to Hospital Aid.
You mentioned that the Hospital Aid Society,
mm-hmm.
which I know of,
mm-hmm.
Helped poor families, etc. When did it move from out in that community into the hospital? Because there
All right, good point. As clinics evolved in hospital situations, the Montefiore clinics were probably the most heavily used clinics in the city. Both a question of locale and a question of available resources. Now I'm going back to the 20s, obviously before my time, but historically I believe accurate. Did I mention, and this is so cogent, and you would appreciate this, Shirley, that the first social service department salaries were paid for by Ladies Hospital Aid Society. Now, you know, it took a long time for social service to achieve independent recognition as a profession.
Yeah.
You would know in the profession.
Yeah. Well, it preceded Jewish Family and Children's Service.
Exactly.
Yes.
And furthermore, even the medical profession, you know, had to learn.
Right.
And to this day, we have physicians who aren't as sensitive to the wonderful working relationship between the social service contingent, though I think that's disappeared. I think there's a very strong interaction now. But I know when my husband started, he had to request and seek out the social service consultation and so forth, and was one of the men who felt how important that was. So important that I think he was probably the first internist in the city that employed a full-time social service worker in the 40s and 50s, which you may not have known either.
No, I didn't.
Anyway, the social service department in the 20s was paid for by Ladies Hospital Aid. And then, as so many things happened, it became a part of the hospital. Did I mention that the first home care project at the hospital? All right, I just thought of that. The first home care project, which is now taken for granted and which is being expanded on every level in our care of the elderly, was a pilot project which Ladies Hospital Aid got a grant from the A.W. Mellon Foundation. Did you know that, Shirley?
No, I didn't know.
Yeah, yeah. This was before my presidency, but during my active regime.
Mrs.
So this would have been the late.
Was then director.
Oh yes, we worked very closely with Celia DeMoss.
Right.
Celia DeMoss, and then she was Celia Halpern.
Right.
Now to go back to my point about the clinics and your question, our involvement was financial, on a monthly level and to a tremendous.
To the clinic?
To the social service department, who would bring us the bills.
Oh.
And we paid for, and we're still doing it. Ladies Hospital, Ladies Society is still doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Orthopedic appliances, glasses, dentures, casts, braces. These are physical activities, needs. We went beyond that. We went into transportation costs. We went into home, not visitation, that's a different scene, but some volunteers would, we tried over the years many times to get the home visits.
Yes.
That, however, was and still is sensitive, because you need such trained people to do that kind of thing, almost on a professional level. But certainly our bills, and if you'll pick up any of the old hospital aiders and our old bulletins, you'll see thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars every year on a monthly basis to the social service department from Ladies Hospital Aid. Then, of course, as our hospital services developed, recreational services. I work with a woman by the name of Sonia Palias. I wonder if you know Sonia.
I know of her.
Sonia came in as a young and very compassionate and warm professional to be our first recreational director. We paid, hospital aid paid, for the first recreational and occupational director.
Oh.
But occupational, actually, you know, then became such occupational therapy, and occupational treatment is such a major part of every institution now. But at the beginning, at the very beginning, we brought in a professional to do recreational therapy with the patients. I hadn't even remembered that until this
moment.
So
your basic, Ladies Hospital Aid was basically a financial support
and
the hospital.
And volunteer.
Well, voluntarily, I understand.
No, not the money, but the volunteer
assistant.
On the one-to-one.
I see.
We've had years when we've had 400 or 500 volunteers in hospital.
Now, I just wondered if those volunteers were directed by LHAS or by social service.
You anticipated my comment. At the beginning of our enormous volunteer program, they were directed by volunteers. If I was the vice president of hospital service, I had a chairman of the recreational department. And I did. I had a chairman of the pediatric floor. I had a chairman of the library service part. I had a chairman of the gift shop. I had a chairman of the gift cart. And don't forget, we were 4,000 strong in those days.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, my chairman would report to to a vice president. Sometimes we had department heads, so that it was a liaison to the vice president, and the vice president ultimately to the executive and to the president. Mm-hmm. As this program grew, we, in conjunction with the hospital, hired and paid for the first volunteer directors in the hospital.
Oh, I see.
Then when it was apparent that this was an implicit part of the hospital staff, the hospital took it over. In my presidency, we hired the very first part-time secretary in the hospital aid office, part-time. We thrashed that out among ourselves because we had enough volunteer woman power to do all the mailing and to do all the filling of envelope stuffing, as we called it, and to do all the clerical services that running an organization of this size required. But as volunteer manpower changed, and as the organization grew, and the sophisticated techniques obviously entered into it, we hired our first part-time secretary. She was never an executive secretary.
Mm-hmm.
To this day, we don't have an executive secretary. But now we have a full-time secretary, a part-time secretary. The office has obviously grown. It's tried to computerize the whole sweep of progress.
Tell me, you mentioned home care and as a program that was started, and I mentioned Sue Moss's name because she was connected. Could you give us a little more about what this home care, how it operated and so forth?
I'll be happy to try. When an individual, first of all, it was not always the patient who had been hospitalized to get it. See, that became a different nuance. The patient who had been hospitalized and who was going home and still needed additional care required more than just maybe the Visiting Nurse Association.
Mm-hmm.
And patient then who is chronically ill required a professional, a doctor once a week, a nurse on whatever basis the doctor determined, the social service visit and so forth. And it is interesting that early on there was a recognition of an attempt to keep people out of the hospital, even before hospital costs escalated to the extent that they have today, and that there were people who were better off at home if there was a home environment that could handle a chronically ill individual or a recovering individual. Home care still exists.
Yes, I know. Were you part of the initiation of that kind of service?
We were. I say we got the grant from A.W. Mellon, the pilot project.
Mm-hmm.
We supplied the oxygen, I remember, to be specific. Mm-hmm. I mean, here when I say we supplied, we there too would get the bills, so to
and
speak.
And pay for that.
Uh-huh.
That's a tremendous.
We didn't use volunteers as much, but we paid the bills.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that we had 4,000 volunteers?
No, membership.
Membership.
Oh, membership.
Not volunteers.
Well, no.
But in terms
many
of
members in name only, you know, over the years, obviously.
Were there volunteers, the volunteer group started to decline? About when would you?
The volunteer group or the membership?
Either one, I don't know.
You want me to address those?
Yes, yes.
All right. When I came back to Pittsburgh, one of my first jobs for hospital aid was membership co-chairman. I remember we used to give prizes. I got 400 members in 1 year. Well, now this was post-World War II. Elba Perrin and I were co-chairman of membership. Elba is still working. She is the very valuable co-chair of the gift shop on a volunteer level. And I think goes into that gift shop every day of her life. With Marley Pollock, who is a past president and still very active. Elva and I were both the co-chairmen of the membership campaign. The president was the late Rose Katz, Rose Swartz. And the field was fertile. Here was all the, here were the returning veterans and their new brides. And Montefiore was very highly recognized, very strong. And I might add this. I don't know that I discussed this at all. We may take this into another topic. The bulk of the Jewish the doctors were in Montreal.
Yes.
In the 40s, this was their hospital, and the 50s, and even the 60s. They weren't on other staffs, though your husband and mine were. My mm-hmm. husband really had the staff position at St. Margaret's from the very beginning of his return to Field of Arthritis mm-hmm. and to Pittsburgh. But, and this is the point I want to make, St. Margaret's had an auxiliary, but it was and is a closed auxiliary.
In terms of what?
In terms of membership.
Yes, you mentioned that the last time, and
did
I wasn't
you know
quite sure
well,
what you were
I'll be glad to tell you.
Intimating.
Well, I'll be very candid. Invitation to their auxiliary is by invitation, and it's a legacy. And I'll never forget, if you want me to expand on this
mm-hmm,
now.
Yes.
The association Paul had with the hospital was and is a very positive one, to the point that, as I think I told you, he had been elected to the board, which was unusual, he being a doctor, it's mm-hmm. become more common. It took Montefiore much longer to do that. St. Margaret's did it early on. Paul was an officer of the board for many, many years, a vice president, founded a very fine relationship with the very fine board of trustees. But when the president of the Women's Auxiliary and I met at a Cinderella ball, which was their annual fundraising mm-hmm. one year, and she and her husband and Paul and I are sitting and having a drink, and she said, oh, I know so much about your activities as president of Ladies Hospital Aid, whether I was still in it or what, I was still active.
Right.
And we'd love you to work for us. We know you have so much knowledge, we need you in the gift shop, we could use you. And I said, well, I'm delighted, Mrs. So-and-so, I would like very much to work. Does this mean you're inviting me to become a member?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was very blunt, and she cringed, and she hemmed and hawed, and said, well, you know our membership is different. I said, yes, I do know your membership is different. Has it changed? And she said, no. We just want you to work for us. And I said, I really don't want to work for you if I can't be a member. I just don't regard my work quite that way. Now, the same thing is true.
Was that unusual?
No, it was the norm.
It was the norm.
Let me give you our experience at West Penn Hospital.
Right.
West Penn Hospital had a separate auxiliary, and still does for doctors' wives, called the Guild. The West Penn Guild,
mm-hmm.
and we were segregated into that organ. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. If you want to help the hospital, you belong to the Guild. I'm not so sure that's even changed.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I had a very interesting experience with the West Penn Guild.
Really?
You want to hear about it?
Yes, absolutely. That's one of the questions I have.
The things that are coming back
right.
in my mind. When Paul went on the staff of West Penn, then the invitation, this is the process when the husband becomes a member of the staff. The hospital guild invited me to join. And there were three or four other very active Jewish women whose
mm-hmm.
husbands had been very closely identified with theirs with West Penn. And the one who was a lovely lady and a friend of mine, the late wife of Dr. Frank Abrams, I don't know if you know that name, her name was Dottie, she was
mm-hmm.
not a Pittsburgher. Perfectly lovely lady who tragically died very young. Dottie invited me to her home for a membership meeting when I became a new member of the guild.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, and there were a few other people, but a very few whom I knew, the other two or three Jewish women. I knew one or two of the non-Jewish women, having met them with their husbands in a social situation, but very superficially. And the subject of scholarships for nurses came up. Now, and this is something we'll have to talk about too.
Mm-hmm.
You know that the nursing school of the Montefiore Hospital was a large and powerful and highly respected nursing school for years. And the enormous scholarship program was paid for by Ladies Hospital Aid Society. Here we go again.
Yes.
Out of our gift shop proceeds. And I mean 60, 70, 80,000 a year. This is what I'm talking. substantive bucks. And we did it on the basis of merit and need. And we did it with enormous pride. And it was, there was a recognition day and a ceremony and so forth. Now, they had one scholarship. Their fundraising was on a minuscule scale compared to us. First of all, they were in numbers, what were they, 70, 80, 90, maybe 100 women. So it was all very much smaller. And they're talking about scholarships. And I had the chutzpah. Have you read Dershowitz's book?
No, almost.
I had the chutzpah to do something that I was admonished for later by one of my Jewish friends. Mm-hmm. I had the chutzpah to speak up at the first meeting I attended. Now, why did I speak up? Because this is my field. I know scholarship and student aid like the palm of my hand. And they're talking about how do they go around about giving this. And I said, you know, scholarship is a reality today, in today's world. It had already become a reality on the college level. There are two-thirds of the kids, maybe at that time it was 50% of the college students going to school, are getting some kind of aid. And to get aid on the basis of merit is a lovely thing. It deserves recognition. So you don't have to hide the fact that you're giving a scholarship. Mm-hmm. You can use it for your PR. You can make something of this with a picture. You can do something exciting with this. Well, they weren't ready for that. And not only were they not ready for that, but I was literally shushed down. One young woman, however, who came in the next year or the following year as president of that guild, heard me that day. Mm-hmm. Oh, after the meeting, my hostess and one other lady said, really, Gertrude, I think you shouldn't have spoken. I said, well, I'm sorry. If I have anything to contribute, I'm not exaggerating this. Mm-hmm. I never went to another meeting. I simply never, it was a whole different mentality,
yes,
Shirley.
I was going to say, did you understand the mentality, even though you might not have accepted it?
I understood it. It had impinged on my professional life as a teacher at one or two points. But I didn't think I'd find it to that extent, no. And by the way, I was gingerly. I wasn't quite this. You know, I was trying to be, as I think I am, diplomatic and say the program is wonderful and look how it can grow and look what we can do with it and so forth. Nobody picked up the ball and ran with it. Nobody. But this one woman who heard me came in as president and she called me and said, I'd love to meet with you. I'd love to pick your brain. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There was
good.
One. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I said, I'd be delighted. And we met and we had a lovely lunch and she was a bright lady. I think they'd left the city. Mm-hmm. And she said to me, look at our fundraising. Tell me what we can do. I said, look, you have a card party once a year. And it's very beautifully done at one of the country clubs.
Yes.
And you sell Pittsburgh Field Club, I'm not sure, or Fox Trap, wherever.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you sell handmade things and you have a little giveaway and so forth, but you charge $20 for a table, $5 a head. I said, nobody who comes to that party that day would resist if you made the table $25.
Mm-hmm.
You want basics? I'm very pragmatic.
Yes.
I know you have to start small. Make it $25 for your table. And she's writing furiously, and she says, this is marvelous. I said, you're going to get it. Do you know they voted it down?
Oh, my. Yes. You know, it's interesting. I'm trying to get a sense of what made the other hospital ladies' auxiliary groups different from LHAS, and I assume from what you're saying, that LHAS took everybody
exactly.
in as members.
Exclusivity as opposed to inclusivity.
Mm-hmm. And the exclusivity...
We reached out enormously for members. We were open-ended.
Mm-hmm.
They
and the others were primarily doctors' wives who were not Jewish.
Oh, this was most certainly that.
Okay.
Most certainly that, number one. McGee Women's Hospital has a club called the 20th Century or the 25 or something.
Mm-hmm.
and that group had been. And again, if I'm not accurate on today's level, I don't want to in any way malign anybody.
Right.
But for many years, that was an exclusive group of women, whom I learned, many of whom were from the South, and they kind of conducted themselves in that lovely lady laid back way. They still, to my knowledge, don't have an auxiliary. Now look, Shirley, now that Montefiore is a part of the university, you know, they're thrilled to have LHAS. They haven't had anything like us.
Yes, I wondered too, that's what I was going to ask you. I wondered if LHAS had any part in the decision that was made to sell the hospital and the effect of that sale to the university upon LHAS.
Have you heard how vocal I was at that time?
No.
Well, you're coming to the right person.
Right.
Not only had we not heard, but it was one of the most painful, wrenching, depressing, saddening, and I'm not speaking only for myself. To this day,
it
makes me...
You're the first I've heard say that, I must...
Well, I can give you names of all of these days, the number of women. And when the powers that be came to the first LHAS meeting, and I can tell you who they were, they were then President Stanley Gumbert and past President Milton Porter, of course Irwin Goldberg, Executive Director, Marvin Lieber as the attorney, Robert Paul as one of the past presidents, wondering if I was excluding anybody else, no doctors,